This is the Bat Pod. Bat Pod.
Grab your bat microphone. It's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate. It's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer. And joining me tonight, Martin Ferretti and Jay Loving.
I have docked my dictatorship on the bays of Gotham.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Tonight, gentlemen, we are going to be discussing Batman number 72, Detective Comics Annual number 2, and Batman, The Last Knight on Earth, book 1. Are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's head to the books.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
Our first book tonight is Batman number 72. Your writer is Tom King. Your artists are Mikel Yanin and Jorge Fornes. Colors, Jordi Belair. Letter, Clayton Cowles. Cover, Finch and Belair. Variant cover, Michael Golden. Associate editor, Rob Levin. Editor, Jamie S. Rich. In this issue, Batman battles Bane throughout Wayne Manor, and we get a play-by-play of what Bane's plan has been all along. And the issue ends very similar to Nightfall, and frankly, it has me scratching my head. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about the last page?
We're getting to Batman's back being broken again, assumingly.
That's a lot to assume.
It looks the same. Was this his goal all along? Because I thought this was a different type of book. I thought this was, you know, break him down mentally, not physically. I could be off base here, but...
The question then becomes, with the amount of psychological stuff that we've had over the past 72 issues, in particular, that I would say the last, what, like 5 or 6 at least, maybe it's just meant to be a metaphor for this mental breakdown.
Interesting.
Well, the other thing I was thinking, you know, it was brought up last episode that maybe this isn't really happening. Maybe this is happening in his head.
I can only wish.
That's still possible. Like you, I'm scratching my head over this. I have been for several issues. Now, it's not bugging me necessarily because I don't mind being in the dark about this because I'm assuming we'll eventually get the story. But yeah, I was really taken aback when they got to that point where seemingly Bane does the same thing he did in Nightfall and physically breaks Batman's back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Believe it or not, I actually like this issue. It's hard to believe coming from me. But I enjoy this issue quite a bit, in particular the art. And I think I enjoyed the writing as well, because it felt like one of the problems that I've had with this book and a lot of issues is the truncated speech that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And this was kind of a whole narrative, right, being told by Thomas Wayne, as we learn in the last panel. The thing that I didn't understand about this issue was why we had to have this issue. Because really, everything that we're shown and told in this issue is stuff that we already know, right? There's nothing here that really advances the plot of the story, aside from that one section that you guys are mentioning.
No, there's nothing in here that surprised me. I mean, you might not know the exact detail who we told to do what, but there was nothing in here that was like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all made sense. The one thing about this issue, though, the one thing that we got in one panel, it came directly out of Star Wars. You know, after Luke is getting electrocuted by the Emperor and Vader looks down, we're getting the same thing from Thomas Wayne.
Mm.
We're getting him in that one panel looking down. Now, his point of view This narrative happened, it said, the day of or the day after the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
The story of them fighting and what happens to Batman happened now. The narrative happened when the wedding supposedly didn't happen.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't really find that particular section of it too interesting. I don't think there's anything new in terms of story. The interesting stuff for me was in the last two pages when Thomas is finishing his long speech. It almost seems like, to me, it seemed like he's almost disowning Bruce and taking Bane in as like his son and heir. And that's the reason why he's supporting him, because he sees Bruce as weak and Bane as somebody that can get all these villains together and actually accomplish the mission that maybe Thomas Wayne was out to do on his reality.
What do you think, Jay?
Yes, I think that's something similar to what I've got. I mean, what I was thinking. I also, even though I was had me scratching my head, I still like the issue like Martin did. It, to me, we're talking about nothing really advanced the plot other than the last couple of things. I thought that all of Thomas Wayne's speech was helpful to me because it was really, it's a synopsis of the first 71 issues. Every arc has happened, has touched on, and it kind of helped a little, tie it together a little bit more for me. It reminded me of some things. Yes, I read, I knew this, but I hadn't thought about it in a while, like, you know, the Gotham Girl. That was helpful to me as far as being a little more cohesive with the story.
So are we under the understanding that Bane was the one that gave Gotham Girl the powers, or do you think that that could be somebody else?
I hadn't thought about it as much. I always assumed that it wasn't Bane. You know, with her being so central to the plot, at least in the beginning, maybe it was.
I mean, that's the way I took it, was that everything from the very first arc has been engineered by Bane. And if that's not true, then I've misread it. But it certainly, from the way this was written, it certainly implied that.
From the very first issue, everything that has happened is basically Bane setting everything up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, after last issue, I jumped into this issue thinking, I have no idea what direction this is going in. And just like this issue, I have no idea what's going to happen in the next. I know we get City of Bane, but I have an idea what that's. But we really don't know what's going to happen to Bruce from this point.
So City of Bane starts in three issues, right?
75.
So yeah, 75. Right.
So we got two more issues before City of Bane starts.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe at maybe once 75 comes around, the way the story is being told will change a little bit. I mean, I would assume by the fact that it's called City of Bane and looking at that second to last page, that Bane's going to kind of take over Gotham and Bruce is not going to be around to do anything about it. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So.
And I hope, I'm hoping that's not what happens, but. Well, it's just too much like The Dark Knight Returns to me.
Yes, I agree.
Or Dark Knight Rises, excuse me. Yeah, no one to tell them, so.
Yeah, I can see that totally. Again, the art in this book is fantastic.
I agree. You know what they need to do? They need to do like, oh God, what was that? Tales of the Dark Knight or whatever, something like that, with Jorge Fornes doing the art, man.
Yeah. This whole book, I mean, this whole series, the art has been pretty spectacular.
I agree.
Given that it's biweekly shipping, and sometimes the art does fail some issues in some other series, it hasn't in this one.
Yep. Although I will say I was a little disappointed by the fact that the story is only 17 pages. Just saying.
Yeah, it was short.
Yep.
I did not notice that, but...
Well, I think with this one, you notice it less because there were a lot more words on the page.
Yeah.
Usually they read much quicker than this.
Right, they do. And that's really what Tom King's been known for, is in this, at least in this Batman book. Well, he was in Heroes in Crisis, too. It's very wordy.
Yeah. Yep.
Was there anything else you fellows wanted to add?
No, give me a Thomas Wayne miniseries.
That would be cool, actually.
Yeah, I want that. Because we haven't seen much of him since Flashpoint, so bring it.
No, and I actually hope we get an issue. I mean, the way that this is being written, it's like slow burn type of thing. I want to see what Thomas Wayne's motivations. We know what his main motivation is, but I want to see a little bit behind what he's thinking and what his goal is, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and head to topic of the week.
Who is this guy?
I'm Batman.
You could be Batman.
Sure.
I'm Batman.
See?
I'm Batman.
You sound like Cookie Monster.
I'm Batman.
That's Batman.
I'm Batman.
Listen, I'm Batman.
Oof. You even sound like a bad guy.
I swear I am a good guy.
Okay, Mr. Batman.
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 That's what I said, Batman.
No, you're saying Batman. Listen, I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Welcome to Topic of the Week, and the topic this week is our top three Batman stories that you could recommend to a new reader. So, Martin, you can go first.
Prepare for hashtag unpopular opinions. I know Jay agrees. So, yeah, my first one on the list is actually an Elseworlds story, believe it or not. I like the Elseworlds books because I do think that they're written in a way where if it's your first time reading a character, you can get a lot out of the story without having to know all the basics. And even the basics are oftentimes kind of reiterated in the storyline, right? You get like a basic origin story real quick. But the Elseworlds are also great for ongoing readers of a character because they give you something new and cool to think about. And so one of my favorite Elseworlds stories and one of the books that I would recommend for a new reader is a one-shot. Came out in 1991. It is Batman Holy Terror. Written by Alan Brennert, with art by the always incredible Noam Breyfogel, letters by Bill Oakley, colors by Laverne Kandirsky, and editors Denny O'Neill and Kelly Puckett. This is a story, kind of takes place, it's a very religious society. A lot has changed in the terms of the world, how the world works. It deals with Oliver Cromwell kind of continuing to be the head of England and England kind of having this worldwide empire that's basically ruled by religion. Bruce Wayne is part of this whole thing and he's training to be a priest. But as he's doing his training, he learns that maybe the system had something to do with his parents being killed. So he starts researching the whole scenario, ends up going to this secret underground bunker where the government does experiments on metahumans. He meets a few different people there, like, for example, the Flash is in there. There's a Green Lantern. Really heartbreaking stories that you learn in this sub-basement. And as he's fighting his way out of this place, when he gets found out, he learns about Project Green Man, who happens to be Superman that the government has been experimenting in underground. Just by chance, one of the guys is trying to kill Bruce, shoots him, and the bullet hits Superman. So Superman's always kind of this ray of hope within the DC universe. And I know we're not going to talk about it now, but that's always been kind of key. And if you read the latest Doomsday Clock, amazing issue, well worth the 30-year wait. That's like a central focus of that in there as well, you know? So anyways, so after Bruce escapes from this room with Project Green Man, he finds kind of a higher up in the government, and the guy's like, we don't know who killed your parents. Like, all this stuff, all the voting's done anonymously. We don't keep any records because ultimately the government's what's in charge and not people. And so Bruce decides he should take his vengeance out on cleaning up the system, not on a particular person. So there's some, like, similarities there between the actual origin story, right, with Joe Chill and all that, and ultimately what Batman's mission becomes. But really great and fantastic art. And it's a one-shot, so, you know, you can't go wrong with one-shots. They're quick and easy reads.
Very interesting. I have not read this one, actually.
Oh, you should.
So, that's one that I need to get on. How about you, Jay? Are you familiar with this one?
Yes, I have. I've read it. Mostly because of Breyfogle. I make no bones about Breyfogle being probably my favorite Batman artist. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know if you know this, but Jay and I are actually the same person, just separated in time.
Okay. Yes. So, Jay, what's your number three?
Okay. I'm giving these actually in the order in which I would recommend that they be read, but my number three would be, and this should come as no surprise, Batman Year One.
It's a good one.
because there's just no better introduction to Batman if somebody doesn't really know the character. You've got great writing, Frank Miller. You've got great art, David Mazzucchelli. A good story that's not overly complicated, but it ties everything together. You know, it starts with Bruce Wayne returning to Gotham on his 25th birthday, I believe, after being gone for 6 years. And it chronicles the first year of his journey as Batman.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said this any better. It's like, and this is actually my number one. I'll give that away.
Oh, wow.
Just because if I'm giving one story to a new reader, this is one of the ones that I was thinking of. And I didn't want to give obvious ones.
Yeah. Yeah. See, so I thought ahead. I assumed one of you would pick year one, so I did not put it on my list.
There you go. So very cool. So my number three. My number three actually is not a Batman book.
Please tell me it is what I think it is.
It is a story that happened in the JLA.
Oh.
Which I consider to be a Batman story. And it's JLA number 43 through 46, Tower of Babel.
Mm, nice.
The reason I would recommend it to a new reader is, assuming that you've seen the Dark Knight movies, you're familiar with Ra's al Ghul, this is a Ra's al Ghul story.
I'm sorry, who?
Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. What's the proper way?
Very good. That's a good one.
But anyway, he's trying to weed the population of the Earth, and he's taking out the Justice League. And you ask how he's taking out the Justice League? He went into Batman's super encrypted secret files and protocols. And of course, Batman has how to take out the Justice League. And this, I think, is the first story. We've heard it multiple times since that he has, you know, ways to take out the Justice League. But it was very interesting, you know, and unique the way you actually saw him take out each member. And when you're reading this for the first time, you don't know that he's taking out, it's Batman's, you know, plans of how to take out the Justice League. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was basically a Batman story. It was centered around, because the way that Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, distracts Batman is he steals his parents' body and he threatens to put him in a Lazarus pit. And that's what sort of distracts Batman so that they could take out the Justice League. So, yeah, that was one of my favorite.
Yeah, it's a great choice. I hadn't even thought of that. This is the origin of that meme too, right? Like, they always have the superpower beatdowns, right? Like Batman versus whatever. And the correct answer is always Batman, because given enough time, Batman can defeat anybody, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple days ago, I tweeted the panel of the day from the series.
Very good.
When Batman's the bodies of his parents is being lowered near the Lazarus pit, and he's screaming. So very cool panel. And then you got Mark Waid and Howard Porter. Yeah. So yeah, the art in there. And that JLA series was pretty solid. At least the first, you know, bunch of issues with Morrison, and then Waid got on there, and so, yeah.
Did you say Morrison? Hello.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Morrison later.
Grant Morrison. Yes.
We certainly are.
Yes, we are. Yes.
Martin, what's your number two?
My number two is going to be The Black Mirror. This is Scott Snyder. It's one of my favorites. I mean, it's got jock art, so you can't go wrong with that. Really interesting story. You got this weird... I love when Scott Snyder does, like, horror stuff. And, I mean, obviously the guy loves doing horror, and he's great at it. And when you bring in, like, James Gordon Jr., he is the creepiest mother in the world. I don't know if we talked too much about... Didn't we have James Gordon Jr. show up in a book last week or the week before?
We had him show up in The Batman Who Laughs. He's been in
that
book. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
He's also been in the Batgirl.
Yeah.
Batgirl run.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a tie-in to The Batman Who Laughs, and right. Batgirl was pretty upset that he was, like, walking around on the street. So.
Yeah, I just love when Snyder is allowed to do his horror take on things. I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about that later when I do the Last Night on Earth, but I just think it's brilliant. It's I think almost any Batman story that Snyder has done is really a good introduction. I just happen to be partial to Black Mirror because of the horror elements.
And this storyline has one of my favorite scenes in it, in a Batman book, period. You know, when Jim Gordon and James Gordon Jr. are sitting in the cafe, and he's telling the story, and then Gordon kind of looks over and sees the water running, overflowing in the bathroom, because he says he murdered somebody and stuffed them in the toilet or whatever. So, yeah, that was a real creepy scene. So, Jay, what's your number two?
My number two is The Long Halloween.
Bam, bam. That's my number one, by the way.
And the reason for that is it's such a damn good story. You can certainly make the argument that this may be the best Batman story ever written. I mean, of course, that's all personal opinion. You know, Batman's always being talked about, and I even start to make jokes about it now in other books, about the world's greatest detective. There's no story that shows him as a detective better than this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this months-long investigation that he's doing, that it's impeccable storytelling.
Agreed. And this made Calendar Man a great character.
Yes, it did.
Absolutely, yes. Great story. And it actually features... Almost in every issue, it features one of Batman's rogues.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And the covers are just awesome. Tim Sale. Okay, my number two. Now, my number two, I thought about, okay, what Batman book could I give to a new reader? They don't really have to have too much background at all about any of the characters or anything like that. And, of course, I thought of Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo's Court of Owls. And I know the New 52 took a lot of flack, but I thought this initial Court of Owls story and how it was introduced is one of the best villains that has been introduced in a while, in my opinion. And the artwork is just fantastic, because if you weren't familiar with, like, Greg Capullo from Spawn or anything like that, it just is beautiful. And we'll get into that, as you said, we'll get that into that a little bit more when we do The Last Night on Earth. But I love that initial storyline, and then you had that issue where Batman is in the maze, and you felt like you were in the maze because you're turning the book around, and it was wild. Great story.
Nice. Yeah, I considered that from one of mine, The Court of Owls.
Yeah.
I think it's a damn good story.
Definitely top five.
Yeah, and I would really like to see somebody bring those characters back, you know, in a decent story. Because we still have the ongoing, you know, I don't think it was ever completed in the Nightwing book, you know, that they were trying to recruit Nightwing because his, like, some relative, like his great-grandfather used to be Talon.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of stuff about the founding of Gotham in there that I think was really fascinating that hasn't really been explored enough.
Martin, you're number one.
My number one, I'm going to go with the always incredible, that's for you, Ronnie, Geoff Johns in Batman Earth 1. It is an out-of-continuity story. It is technically an Elseworlds-type story. It is not my favorite. It is not my number one story, but it is definitely one of the ones that I would recommend the most to people. Because I think it is really bringing things kind of down to earth and making the character accessible. And you learn a lot about the background of Bruce and what happened to his parents. There's a really interesting take on Alfred. In fact, I would say that this book was really the main inspiration for the show Gotham. If you've seen that, you may see the similarities. If not, then you should read the book. It's really good. There's two volumes of it. Geoff Johns, Gary Frank. So the team on Doomsday Clock. I think they're just both incredible in terms of storytelling, writing, and artistically. They're two of the best, and this is a great story for new readers.
It's an excellent choice.
Yeah.
I actually thought about that when I read this, and then you see Gotham and the way Alfred is. I thought maybe that they got you know, their Alfred from this book.
Yeah, because he's got the military background in Earth One.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's been hints of that in the comics before Earth One, but I don't think it was ever really explored too much.
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
So, Jay, you're number one.
My number one, and this may surprise some people, kind of comes out of left field, but my number one is Batman and Son.
Oh, you are the best. That's why I love you.
It's just, it's a great story. It introduces you to Damian Wayne, who, if you're going to continue to read Batman, is all throughout. It's Grant Morrison. And
what was that? What was that? What did you say?
Grant Morrison. Grant Morrison. And for somebody who's not familiar with his writing, Batman and Son, that arc is probably the most accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison, it's not, he doesn't go off like really strange like he did in RIP, but that's one of my favorite stories, arcs.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Also, that arc includes one of my favorite issues, which is Batman 666, which had future Damian Wayne as Batman, and he was very Thomas Wayne.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was very good. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that are not into Damian, but if you started reading him from the ground floor up, I don't know how you're not a fan. I understand that some of the other Robins might be your favorite, but he's so well written in that arc.
I think the only other person that has written Damian better than Grant Morrison is Peter Tomasi.
Yeah,
I think
Peter Tomasi just gets him. Nobody else gets him.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, that arc is kind of weird if you want to read it, because you get the first half of the arc, and then it breaks into a different storyline. I can't remember what the arc in between is. And then you get the second part of Batman and Son.
Yeah. Yeah. And the spook is in there.
Yes.
Briefly.
Oh, man.
Gotta love the spook, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my number one, I mentioned it earlier, was Batman Year One. I love it so much, I'd give it to somebody brand new. You see Batman from the ground floor up, his first year, as Jay was saying. It's one of my favorite books. I don't know if it'd be my number one favorite of all time, but it's up there. It's up there. So
I'm curious, since we all picked something kind of around the Year One era, why none of us picked, like, Zero Year? Because I think Zero Year is probably a good introduction, right? Do you think maybe there's too much that you have to have beforehand, even though it's kind of an origin story?
I thought about it. I really did think about Zero Year. And I think it is a good story. I just felt that Year One and Long Halloween, I thought, were a little bit better.
Yeah,
Yeah, I never really thought of Zero Year, actually. I read it once. I don't know. I'd have to go revisit that again, because it's been a while since I read it, but from what I remember, it was pretty good, but it didn't stand out for some reason. I don't know what that was at the time, so.
Well, I think the problem is it's crunched in between, like, the Court of Owls and then the stuff, like, the aftermath of that. And then after Zero Years, when you get the beginning of Endgame.
Yeah.
So you have, like, two really huge important storylines, and then, like, in between, it's just like, it's great, and it's Snyder, but it's not as good as, like, the bookends.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I have to agree. So, yeah, that was our topic of the week, and let's go ahead and head back to the books.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power.
Detective Comics Annual Number 2. This is the story is called Adam Raised a Cain. Peter J. Tomasi wrote the story. Travis Moore, Max Rayner are the artist. Tamara Bonvillain and Mick Filardi colorist. Guillaume March did the cover. Dave Welgoss, assistant editor. Molly Mann, editor. And, of course, Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. I smiled the minute I saw the cover of this, because on the cover is the black casebook.
Bingo!
Which is the set of stories that Grant Morrison used to base a lot of his arc on Batman, especially RIP. Stories written in the 60s and 70s dealt with a lot of supernatural and outer worldly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
this book, I mean, this story, I really enjoyed it. We introduced to or reintroduced to some characters we haven't seen in a long time, like the Eraser that we talked about, I think, last episode.
Yes.
He looked a little creepy, though.
Yeah, he did.
I liked the way they had him rendered in.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Reaper comes back, who we haven't seen him. I think he made a brief appearance in New 52, but this is a character. There's so many callbacks to Morrison's run and other runs if you've been reading Batman for a long time, but I don't think that it's necessary for you to know those to appreciate the story. In other words, it's not written to an inside audience here that you have to understand, but it basically deals with Batman now as this Reaper has resurfaced after the original Reaper, Judson Kaspian, has been dead, and Batman thinks this is a copycat or an imitation person. He ends up going to Greece, under the pretense of going as Bruce Wayne to this big summit conference.
Which is an analog to the Bilderberg conference, which I think just like recently happened, like 2 months ago.
Right.
It's a yearly thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so he discovers, he runs, of course, traces this down, thanks to a brilliant acting job by Alfred. He smokes out the Reaper, and they end up having a battle, and we find out this Reaper is actually the creation of Caspian's son, who is building now a network of Reaper, Julian Kaspian, who's now building a network of Reapers.
Mm-hmm. So the most interesting thing I found out about that, and one thing that you didn't mention, is how closely this ties into Morrison's stuff, in particular the Batman Incorporated stuff.
Yes.
Which, as part of this Black Casebook, there is an issue that I would say was the number one inspiration for Batman Incorporated. Detective Comics 215, The Batman of All Nations. It's got some of the worst superheroes of all time, but it's a fun story. I always recommend everyone read Silver Age stories. They're super quirky. But there's a lot of references in this issue. I think I caught like three or four to Batman Incorporated. In fact, doesn't Batman find this one Reaper in one of the hideouts?
The safe houses or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, in one of the Batman Inc. safe houses. And here you have the Reaper creating like this new Reaper Inc. type thing. That was a cool dichotomy between the two, because the Reaper has kind of gone the opposite direction of where Batman has gone, right? Batman doesn't believe in killing or violence. He believes in justice and, you know, true crime and punishment. Whereas the Reaper just believes that he is the law, and that all these Reapers would be the law. So that was a really interesting way to go about it. I enjoyed that. And, of course, the Morrison callbacks, I mean, hello.
Yes, absolutely.
But the biggest callback is Batman Year 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's never referenced that I know of. That story isn't well remembered.
Probably for good reason.
But, yeah.
I was going to ask you guys, I thought and couldn't remember ever seeing this female character, Sophia Zervas. I don't remember her ever showing up in a previous...
I don't remember her showing up either.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't either. I thought about looking it up, but I totally forgot.
I looked it up. It doesn't... Nothing.
No, okay. Nothing?
So it's a new character. All right. The artwork in this was absolutely brilliant to me. To my knowledge, I've not come across the work of Travis Moore or Max Rainer before, but I thought it was just well done. The coloring is adequate. I mean, is inspiring. So I found this to be very entertaining, and a little bit, I'm surprised I was as entertained, because quite honestly, some of the annuals in DC over the past few years are somewhat forgettable. I've found some of the stories not to be, it's almost like they just, you know, okay, we need something to fill up this annual and this story. And I'm curious to see, since it didn't really come to a conclusion, of how it's going to tie in, because at the end it says, come back for the conclusion of the Arkham Knight in Detective Comics 1005. And I'm thinking, is this going to tie in somehow, and how's that going to work? And
that'd be interesting.
It sounds like that maybe this may be picked up in a future, you know, issues, that sort of thing.
Well, right. It definitely leaves in a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah, yeah. The one thing that I noticed, you know, as far as this annual goes, and the annuals we have been getting, is in previous annuals, we've been getting multiple stories in the issue, and it kind of, you know, some are hit and miss. But this is one big story, and I kind of liked that it was just one big story. It was a little, it felt a little bit different than the usual feel of it.
I agree.
Yeah. Yep. I think a story like this shows me why they picked Tomasi to take over Detective. I think it's obvious to me that he's got a lot of knowledge about where this character has been and where he wants to take him. And the fact that he can do deep cuts like you see in this book, I think it's just brilliant.
And one of the things that I really like is when you get a writer on Batman or Detective or whatever it is, and they know their stuff, you can tell he knows his stuff by the way he writes.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I was thinking about, you know, there was a lot of previous Flashpoint storylines, you know, referenced in this story. So, I mean, at some point it's going to be announced that everything is in continuity, basically.
Oh, they just announced that in Doomsday Clock number 10.
I wasn't going to say it, but...
Spoilers! I love that book, so I don't care. Anybody that hates on the schedule, whatever. That book is brilliant.
Anything else you want to add about this particular annual?
Nothing from me.
Okay. Nope, nothing from me.
Okay. Then we'll go ahead and head to your all's favorite. And what is that?
Yeah.
Stump the co-hosts.
Yes. There better be no Batmite questions this week.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's a different topic.
It's time for the Batpod Stump the Co-Host segment.
So welcome to Stump the Co-Host, our theme this week, and there's always a theme, is Batman 66.
Oh, boy.
It's right up your two's alley, or maybe one of you, at least. So, of course, there's cash and prizes to the winner, or winners. I got two questions here. I asked you both a question. So, Martin, we're going to have you go first. And in Batman 66, of course, Robin would say, "Holy moly, Batman," or he had a lot of different phrases that he said, "Holy." So I'm going to list four. You tell me which one doesn't belong. Okay. Number one, "Holy Captain Kangaroo." "Holy Hole in a Donut." "Holy Bouncer Boilerplate," or "Holy Contributing Delinquency to Minors." Which doesn't belong? "Holy Captain Kangaroo," "Holy Hole in a Donut," "Holy Bouncy Boilerplate," "Holy Contributing Delinquency to Minors."
Oh, wow. So that's, I want to say A, but I think Captain Kangaroo was already going on, right? When Batman 66 came out? Okay.
Yeah.
The last one sounds so ridiculous. I also feel like that should be it. Can you repeat that one? Can you repeat D?
"Holy Contributing Delinquency to Minors."
It's got to be that one. That's the fake one.
Okay, that's the fake one. You are incorrect.
What?
The fake one that I made up was "Holy Captain Kangaroo."
Oh, my God.
That's what I would have picked for, I think, licensing or something reasons. I don't think they would... If Captain Kangaroo was on another network or something.
I actually looked that up to see, to make sure that was on previously, and I said it had to be. So, yeah.
So, wow, you got me.
So, Jay, you ready for your question?
I'm ready.
Okay, Batman 66 had a lot of famous villains, you know, the Batman rogues, but there were some lesser-known villains that showed up in that series. I'm going to list four villains that are lesser known. Which one doesn't belong? A, the Puzzler. Two. Two. B, False Face. C, the Clock King. Or D, Tricky Dicky. So the Puzzler, False Face, Clock King, or Tricky Dicky?
Oh, man.
I just got to give you, let me give Jason time to think. I got to give you props for these questions because these are very creative.
They are. It's got to be D, Tricky Dicky, is the one that doesn't belong. I don't remember that.
You are correct. Tricky Dicky.
There's a bit of trivia.
I made it up.
A bit of trivia. You mentioned the Clock King. There was an episode called The Clock King's Crazy Crimes, which is the first time Bill Finger was ever credited on anything with Batman. He helped whoever, I'm trying to think of the guy, he helped co-write that episode.
Yeah, wow. He co-wrote a few of them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting because I didn't realize, I know I haven't seen a lot of episodes lately, but I didn't realize Mr. Freeze, how many Mr. Freezes there actually was, different actors played Mr. Freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Three.
Yep, it was three.
Their names escaped me for a moment. Eli Wallach was one of them, I know, and I can't. The other two escaped me for a moment.
Yeah, I had the list, but I don't have it in front of me. So Jay, you won. Are you excited?
I am doing somersaults right now.
Okay, would you like to know what you won?
Of course, I want to know what I won.
Okay, you've won a free beard shave at Mr. Zaz's barbershop. Yes, a free shave every week for a year at Mr. Zaz's barbershop. You know, you go in there and get your shave. Although I don't know how much complaining I would do about the quality of the shave, you know, because you might become another scar on his body. So be careful with that. Enjoy your shave. I know you got one of those beards that look a little, I don't even know how to describe it, but yeah. So there you go.
It's a full beard. That's funny. Man, there should be a Mr. Zaz's barber.
Yes, there should.
Probably only one person in 1,000 would get it, but still, there should be one called that.
Yeah. So very cool. That was our Stump the Co-Host. Almost got you. Got 50% there. Let's go ahead and head to our final book.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
What symbol?
Something elemental, something terrifying.
The final book of the week is Batman Last Night on Earth, number one. Written by Scott Snyder with art by Greg Capullo, inks by Jonathan Glapion, colors by FCO Placencia, letters by Tom Napolitano, cover by Greg Capullo, a variant by Jock, associate editor Amadeo Torturo, editor Mark Doyle. Spoiler alert, this is the best thing I read all week. Maybe even all year. Spoilers. This is quite interesting. I love when, like I said before, I love when Snyder is given kind of free rein to do what he wants. And it doesn't always work. I was not a huge fan of, like, the Dark Knight's Metal stuff, for example. But this story is kind of a continuation of what he and Capullo started with their Batman run. Obviously, it takes place at an undisclosed time in the future. Or is it in the future? We could talk about that. And it's supposed to be their final story, kind of the bookend to what they started. How long ago is that? 8 years ago? 9 years ago? So I'm very curious. And I got to say, I really enjoyed this quite a bit. It is a little bit alternate reality, a little Elseworldsy, but maybe it's not. Again, we'll talk about that. So Batman wakes up. Oh, well, let me not start there. The story is told in four parts. In part one, it seems like a standard Batman story. Batman's trying to figure out who is placing these chalk lines around Gotham City. And when you place the chalk lines together, it actually is a depiction of Batman's dead body. So he wants to know who's doing it. The heart of it, of course, at Crime Alley, where his parents were killed. While he's investigating, he finds a boy that's been posed under an umbrella. He goes to reach out to him and gets shot. Next thing you know, he wakes up in Arkham Asylum. And he's a very young man. And everyone is kind of really happy that he's awake. Apparently he's been in a coma for a long time. Alfred mentions 30 years. I think that's something we should talk about. I think that was kind of maybe the first hint that there's something else going on here. The Joker is his doctor. He's not the Joker. Redman Hood. So like Red Hood, of course. You see Harley in there as one of the doctors. You see a bunch of characters show up in the story. And as the story progresses, you learn that maybe this is not actual reality, even though they're trying to convince him that he's made up this whole being Batman thing while in his psychosis. Alfred ends up relating to him that maybe things are not what they seem. Somehow he escapes, and as he escapes, he finds himself in a deserted world. And perched up on a stick is a, we'll just say, lantern. And inside the lantern is the Joker's head. And the Joker's head talks to him the entire time. As they're progressing through this post-apocalyptic landscape, they fight some giant Green Lantern projection babies. The Amazons come to the rescue. Supergirl, Poison Ivy. I think it was Huntress and Tigress. I could be wrong. I can't remember exactly. Because I took notes and I forgot to save them.
Sure.
I did. It's true. And then we see Wonder Woman with a very, very punk haircut. She kind of explains to Bruce what's been going on and how they're kind of the last remnants of humanity. There is a new big bad in the world called Omega who has access to the anti-life equation, and he's kind of taken over the world. So Wonder Woman is getting ready to take all the survivors to Hades, and Bruce says, "Nah, bro, I'm Batman." How's that? Is that a good recap? Did I get it all?
I would say so.
Awesome. So did you guys think that this story is happening in Bruce's head or not? I'm curious to know how you guys feel about what the actual setting of this is.
Well, you kind of touched on it earlier when you said Alfred said something like you've been in here for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way Caputo has drawn Bruce Wayne, he doesn't even look 30.
No.
I mean, he looks like he's just like the very beginning of his career, not late 20s. So it's like that, an immediate, you know, question mark that goes up. So time frank, whether this is really happening or not, I don't know. I'm withholding judgment till I get further into it.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you exactly what's going on.
Yes, Scott Snyder's with the podcast.
This is happening in the real world because this is straight out of the Future's End Batman issue. Where he has the machine that he can, at the end, he can keep being Batman for as long as forever. So this guy hasn't been around for 30 years. He's told he's been around for 30 years because he has the memories. He has the memories. So Batman has probably been, I don't know how many times he's been recreated because there when he's talking to Wonder Woman, he's like, hasn't been around. So maybe Alfred didn't want to, you know, recreate him. And when he decided to do this, he wanted him not to be Batman anymore. He wanted him not to. But this is pretty harsh, you know. Alfred putting him through that he actually, they're telling him that he's the one that murdered his parents. Don't be Batman, but you murdered your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I got confused a little bit at the beginning. As the story progressed, I think there were some clues that had me leaning in a couple different directions. But that murdering your parents thing was weird, because I would not expect Alfred to say something like that. Although it did become a little obvious that Alfred has something to do with it, in particular when they're in that bell tower, right? Getting ready to bring Batman back down, and Alfred's like, let me just talk to him in private. And you see, like, the Matrix thing, you know, where, like, Batman touches Alfred and the hologram kind of disappears from his face, and you see that Alfred's an extremely old man now. So obviously time has passed. He reveals some stuff that kind of flew past me in my brain. Like, he talks about Toy Man, setting up this like fake Gotham with people on the ground, but that's not something that we see.
No, I think he was going to make him think that everything was normal so he could go and live a normal life per se, but
that's not Batman.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
That's not Batman, which is, no. I mean, it's interesting, right? So you get some development in the Bruce-Alfred relationship. And, I mean, over the years, Alfred really sees Bruce as his son, right? So it makes sense that he would want something else for him, especially in this world that's just kind of obliterated, basically.
And he wanted his son, because in that one scene where, you know, it's revealed really how old Alfred is, and he says, "I'm so sorry." You see it in his face. And Greg Capullo is just smashing it in this book.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So we have this new bad guy, Omega. When Bruce is talking to Wonder Woman, she hints that that Bruce trained Omega. So who do we think that is? I mean, obviously it's got to be somebody in the Bat family, right? At least I would assume so.
Yeah, I would think it would have to be somebody in the Bat family.
We learn a little bit about the history of how this whole thing happened. There's no explicit mention of anybody in the Bat family per se. But, you know, she talks about how Lex kind of riled up humanity to go against the superhero metas. And they did it first. And so Lex tried to use that to his advantage and take power. But then they went after Lex and defeated all the villains. But, like, where did Omega come from through all this? Is Omega created as a result of what happens to Lex? Or was he around before that? That's kind of what I'm curious about. And I'm trying to think, like, what characters Omega could be if it's somebody in the Bat family. And I would say somebody like Red Hood would be the most obvious. Maybe even like Damian Wayne, because Damian has delved a little bit into mystical stuff, so it would make sense for him to have the anti-life equation. So I don't know. I'm just curious. Thoughts on that?
I don't know either, but did anybody – this thought crossed my mind. It didn't occur to me about the Bat family, but I'm wondering, does this somehow tie into Darkseid? Because
well, you do what see is Darkseid's head.
Yeah, what is Darkseid's symbol? The Omega symbol. So,
right.
I don't know that that's has anything to do with it, but that is like the first thing that popped into my head. Is this something to do with that? Their version of this version of Darkseid or something similar to that or tying in.
It'd be interesting. Red Hood is like the most obvious. I think it's going to be somebody you're surprised about.
Probably.
You know what would be really interesting is that if it ends up being Dick, right? Because remember when... God, what was it? Final Crisis, right? When Batman got shot by that bullet and he ended up getting lost in time and Dick took over as Batman. I wonder if after Dick sees like all the stuff that has happened in the world, the only way he ends up determining he can save the world is by possessing the anti-life equation, getting revenge on Darkseid, and just controlling humanity. I don't know. That seems like a stretch for Dick.
It does.
Yeah. Anything's possible. The one question that came up in this issue for me is Joker really talking to him? Because he's the only one that seems to react. Or you know how the Lazarus Pit works? You know, the more you use it, the crazier you are or get. Or
yeah.
So him coming back, does he have like some kind of side effect that he's like... seeing the Joker talk to him or something like that, I was just a thought I had.
Possible. Like I said, at this point, I'm not making any judgments on anything. Along for the ride, see how this goes.
So he has his rebirth suit, too.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Well, again, if it's a continuation of that story, it kind of makes sense that that's where you would go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I dug it. I dug it a lot. The Joker was funny, but not overly funny. And a lot of the funny bits had to do with like him getting like nursery rhymes incorrectly.
Yeah.
like my favorite one that they just cut off right away was the Nantucket one. That once was a man from Nantucket. And of course, I'm not going to repeat it here. But it ends at just the letter D instead of getting the full word. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go look it up. There once was a man from Nantucket. It was very long.
You know, I agree with that. And like you were saying earlier that, you know, Tomasi does very well at capturing the essence of Damien. I think Snyder does a damn good job of getting the Joker's perverse sense of humor.
Absolutely.
And but the funniest thing that Joker did, and I literally chuckled aloud, was when Batman takes the lantern and they're walking through the desert, and he says, "Look at us, it's just like old times, Batman and Noggin."
Yep.
The other thing that I noticed, when you do see the Omega symbol between the chapters, the Omega symbol looks like that it has, like, wings. When it says Part 3, The Asylum, the Omega symbol is, like, thin at the top, but it almost looks like a bat.
It does look like a bat.
Definitely scalloped looking with like a bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. What if Omega is one of the incarnations of Bruce Wayne?
That's a good possibility. Wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
But I agreed with you right off the top. This is probably my favorite issue I've read this year.
Yeah. There's really? So many deep cuts in here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that Wonder Woman's wearing Dr. Fate's mask, right, the helmet, for no reason, right? Just because she's wearing it, right? Because it's useless. There's no magic anymore.
Nope.
Like, that kind of stuff is awesome.
And it looks cool.
And Snyder's really good at that. Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, anything else you all want to add about this particular book?
No.
It's brilliant, and the art's fantastic.
Yep, that's for sure. That's for sure. So we'll go ahead and close up shop here. If you'd like to contact us, we are on Twitter @bat_pod. We do have an email. It's batpodpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Facebook. If you listen to us on iTunes, we'd love to have an iTunes rating or review.
Hey, by the way, when you do so, make sure you leave a 1-star review because our numbers are up 30% today. So do that.
Are they?
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty cool. So anything else you'd all like to add?
Nothing for me.
Nothing for me.
We had some interesting books, some awesome books, some books that had some previous mentions of Morrison and different things. So it was pretty awesome. We got the Eraser. What's better than that? Seriously. So until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.
Holy hole in a donut! Holy bouncing boilerplate!
Holy contributing to the delinquency of minors!